This is the Sporting Citadel Podcast. With your host, Warren Lent. All right. Hold the applause. It's not a big deal. We have Lucas Shapiro of Dime Magazine here with us today. Lucas, how are you today?
I'm great, Warren. How are you?
Doing very well. The NBA is in full swing. We're starting to really see teams' character this time of the year. We're also starting to see LeBron James's character. On his Twitter account, he kind of took a direct shot at the Cleveland Cavaliers, his former team. He said, I'll read it to you before you give your reaction. He said, "Crazy. Karma is a biatch. Gets you every time. It's not good to wish bad on anybody. God sees everything." Lucas, what did you think when you first saw that? Because I was kind of dumbfounded. He hasn't really used that Twitter account for anything else besides promoting the decision. It hasn't really been active, but now it's starting to blow up with something like that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, just the fact that LeBron really just exposed that he's thinking about it constantly is something that we should really take notice. And obviously it was a shot directly at the owner, Dan Gilbert, after his controversial statement towards LeBron. I think it's pretty crazy that he posted that, though, and I know that he's going to get a lot of grief for it, and the fact that he, you know, I even saw Skip Bayless post on Twitter today that, you know, LeBron's going to get some bad press for swearing and using God's name in the same sentence. So, yeah, there could be a lot of people who are mad at LeBron.
Yeah, there's definitely something going on. You're right. He kind of tipped his hand before he said, you know, it doesn't affect me. I'm in Miami now, and nothing's going to change that. I'm here. I don't worry about anything else. But now you can see that he's scoreboard watching a lot lately, and he's making sure that the Cleveland Cavaliers are losing by a good 50 to 55 points each and every night.
Yeah, the Cavs need help. They need some serious help. And it doesn't help that next year's NBA draft really doesn't look to be a strong one. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know what they're going to do. Anton Jameson said that he doesn't know how much of this he can take anymore. Things aren't looking good in Cleveland. It doesn't look to be a popular free agent destination, so you know, this might just be the start of some bad years in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking to get your opinion on that because, I mean, last year, obviously, John Wall was the biggest acquisition in the NFL, in the NBA draft. And, I mean, we don't have that this year. It's weird. I keep looking at NBA mock drafts. I can't find a player with the caliber even a little bit below John Wall's. I was looking for your opinion. What have you been thinking of when you look at the players out there that are probably going to be going to the draft? I mean, what's going on?
Well, this year's draft really has some issues. Right now, it's looking like the number one pick's going to be either Perry Jones of Baylor, who's a 6'11 small forward / power forward, who's put up decent numbers this season, but still needs to work on his consistency. And really, Jared Sullinger of Ohio State, who's, you know, he's been producing the most of any freshman. And if you were to compare him to John Wall, I'd say that's appropriate. But he doesn't really project like John Wall did to the NBA. Obviously, they play different positions. He's a 6'9 power forward who, doesn't really just have the explosiveness that most people associate with NBA superstars that are worthy of being the first pick in the draft. But you look at his production this season and how he's performed against teams that, you know, are quite athletic, I think that if I were an NBA GM, he would be the first guy I would take off the board.
Yeah, he seems a little bit more of a tweener than many other guys I've seen. Obviously, 6'8", 6'9", is big, and he has a big body, and he can do basically, especially in college, whatever he wants down on the block up to this point. He's looking great. But, yeah, it's very interesting to see because, I mean, I still just can't believe that Perry Jones, a guy who has good upside but still lacks consistency, could be a possible number one pick. There was consistency issues were not there necessarily for John Wall last year. But, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting NBA draft. There might be a lot more trades than we saw this past year. I mean, and we saw a lot of trades. That should be very interesting. But Lucas, just getting off here, we'll talk about the big trade that has been going on. This talk has been going on for the longest time. But we'll just look at the conferences in general right now. We'll start in the Western Conference. If we were to look just in the conference standings right now, I don't really see a dominant team necessarily. I mean, how surprised are you that the LA Lakers are in third place right now in the Western Conference?
Oh, definitely. Definitely very surprising. At the same time, I thought that the Lakers were going to have a down year last year because I thought Kobe Bryant, he was on the decline. And I thought the Ron Artest edition wouldn't really work out, but that proved me wrong as they won the finals last year. But now it seems to be the year where things aren't, you know, working out like they thought it would work out. Kobe's athleticism is looking a little down. They're definitely a little chemistry issues, but, you know, I think they'll be fine come playoff time, and it really wouldn't surprise me if they were the ones to come out of the West.
Yeah.
If you look at the top, though, however, Dallas and San Antonio have been doing quite a good job, and I wouldn't be surprised if either of those teams knocked off the Lakers. I just have a hard time seeing it happen, just seeing Kobe Bryant's postseason success.
Right, exactly. I mean, he's been dominant in the playoffs throughout his whole career, and I don't think he'll stop now. But when you look at teams like Dallas and San Antonio, like you mentioned, San Antonio has been doing an amazing job, and it's kind of weird because Tim Duncan's stats are not impressive at all. It seems as if he's decided to turn the team over to players like Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili and kind of be that guy in the background that still does well, but is not the face of the franchise and doesn't get the points and the stats to be the face of the franchise.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's something that I really respect about Tim. He's always known what his role is, and he's never really overdone his welcome in San Antonio. And as you can see, now he's handing off the team to Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, George Hill, Duane Blair. And those guys are really stepping up. And you can tell that he's obviously had a positive influence on them. He doesn't need to put up the stats, really, for him to dominate either. He's actually had quite a good season, but statistically, and, he doesn't really put up the stats, but, you know, it's a huge impact that he brings to the team on the defensive end. I just think that he doesn't need to. They have the guys who can put up the points on the board, like the Hills, the Ginobili and Parker, and, you know, they have a few guys off the bench who not really many people know about. But, you know, if you look at a guy Richard Jefferson's done all right. Matt Bonner is, you know, having a great season for them. A guy who's out of Vermont. But, you know, not many great players come out of Vermont. So
yeah, absolutely.
Pretty cool to see a guy who's from around the same area as I am come out. And he's done quite a good job knocking down shots with consistency. He's almost a 50% three-point shooter. And, guys like that stepping up is really big for the Spurs come playoff time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm going to be very interested to see if San Antonio can keep this up because I think they can. But, Manu Ginobili, You always have to be careful with him. Tony Parker, with his ankles, you never know. So if they stay healthy, they have a legitimate shot at raising the title up in the banners. But I mean, then you look at Dallas. Jason Kidd is still alive, and he's still kicking. And Dirk is just doing an amazing job over there. They've lost two in a row, but at the same time, Lucas, I mean, Dallas is still doing an amazing job.
Yeah, definitely. Those two guys are aging well, and Jason Kidd's a guy that I never really expected to see this because he wasn't really that great of a that goes with Dirk Nowitzki, too. You know, he's not the most athletic guy, but since he has always had great fundamentals, he's aged quite well. And if you look at the guys around him, you have guys like Jason Terry, who's a workhorse. You have guys like, well, I know they just lost Caron Butler for the season, but they have Sean Marion, who's, you know, a nice veteran who can, you know, step up at any time and, you know, take any role that they need him to take. So I think this team really is kind of living up to their on-paper expectations. And I also think that the addition of Tyson Chandler has been good. You know, he hasn't been putting up the greatest numbers, I would say, but, you know, he's been solid and really holding it down in the middle for them.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas has surprised me personally because I didn't see them as a team that could threaten the top of the Western Conference at this point. But they're doing it. They're definitely doing it, and they're doing it very well. The very interesting thing for me. But, I mean, let's talk about the flip side here. We see it was the best of times, and it was the worst of times. Right now, Minnesota and Kevin Love, they're having the worst of times once again. What's the real problem in Minnesota? Nothing, absolutely nothing is going right.
Well, to be honest with you, Warren, Michael Beasley and Kevin Love are actually, I think, in my opinion, doing quite well themselves. It's the rest of the team that really is really struggling. You know, the fact that they lost a draft pick a few years ago in Ricky Rubio, who still has yet to come over, is definitely hurting them. They just need guys to step up, and, you know, they don't really have that kind of pedigree of other teams like the Celtics. If you look at them, they've really been always had guys that are willing to step up. But if you look at the rest of the roster, you have guys like Corey Brewer, Johnny Flynn. They're not especially deep, but, you know, a guy like Darko Milicic, you know, kind of fitting into a role, but they don't really have that one go-to guy that is really a superstar in the sense that he can do everything. I mean, Michael Beasley is a gifted scorer. I mean, he could drop 30 on any given night, but on the defensive end, I don't really see him as a guy who's capable of shutting down anyone in the league. And then you have a guy like Kevin Love who, you know, has been having some ridiculous rebounding numbers this season and been putting up a double-double almost every night. But, I don't really see him as the first option on teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem right now with Minnesota in general. Obviously, since the Garnett trade, even Garnett couldn't do anything to prevent this at this point, even if he stayed in Minnesota, obviously. They're having serious issues. Sacramento is down, epic levels of down, obviously. They don't have much to play for. They don't have much even think about, like we talked about before with the draft coming on, kind of a weak draft. But, Lucas, let me tell you, my newfound interest in the NBA has been spurned by one player and one player only, and he's from Bill Simmons' team, the LA Clippers. And his name is Blake Griffin, and he is absolutely amazing. I mean, I cannot go a single day without checking my schedule and making sure that I can at least watch a little bit of the Clippers game or at least get highlights, because he is a living highlight reel, I'll tell you.
I mean, guys like Blake Griffin just don't come around every year. I honestly don't think I've ever seen a guy with his height that can jump like him. He's amazing. My God. I couldn't even pick out one dunk that was particularly great, but, you know, that one where he destroyed the Knicks center was pretty awesome.
Oh, my God.
I could go on all day, but I'm sure that, the Clippers are loving this, and he's definitely bringing in some positive press to this down franchise. It's just, one of the concerns is, Jay Adande of ESPN.com just actually wrote an article today that I thought was pretty interesting on Griffin and whether he'll stay with the Clippers. You know, because if you look at guys like LeBron, leaving for the mega teams, and, they have a nice little core there of him, Eric Gordon. But, they're really going to have to make some smart decisions in the next few years if they really want to become a good franchise. Because that's a guy that you can build around. He's marketable. He's obviously playing at a very high level. If you put the right pieces around him, I think they could be a real threat in the West.
Yeah, they definitely could. I think they're just maybe one to two players away from being a real threat. The depth is still an issue. But as you said, Eric Gordon is playing very well. Baron Davis plays when he wants to, and Blake Griffin just plays out of his mind. It's insane to see the guy dunk like this. Blake Griffin, and you mentioned the New York Knicks center. He is yet to recover from that dunk. I'm telling you, he's still playing with the effects of getting dunked on like that. That's a team to look out for and be very cautious of in the future. But right now, it still looks like they're maybe, I don't know, they can't get too much done before the deadline, you think? I don't think they want to make a push this year, maybe next year, though.
Yeah, at this point, I don't even think it's worth it. The season's already basically done for them. If they could just, they have some pretty intriguing pieces with Chris Kaman, Baron Davis, and a few young guys on the bench like DeAndre Jordan. Although I think they'd want to keep DeAndre Jordan and Al-Farouq Aminu. But, it's up to them. Do they want to go with the mold of a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder? Or do they want to try to bring in veterans like the Miami Heat? It's really, in my opinion, I would go with the mold of, a team like the Thunder. But the key is for the Clippers' success is to surround players around Blake Griffin that are not injury prone. Because the one thing that worries me about him is that, he doesn't care about his body, it appears to me. He just throws it around. And, if say he has another season-ending injury, if they really want to build a successful franchise, they need to surround him with guys who aren't injury prone. They need to find, maybe a legitimate second option. I like Eric Gordon. I think he's a great player, but on a playoff team, I see him as being more of a third option. If they could just find a point guard, like you mentioned, one that will play every day with consistency, unlike Baron Davis. But that's why I think that in the draft next year, if they could get a guy like a Kyrie Irving or a Kemba Walker, I think they'd be pretty well off, actually.
That would be a great draft pick. Kemba Walker, absolutely. He's doing wonders at UConn like I talked about with Alex, and he's just doing a great job. But before we leave the Western Conference, you mentioned a team that we still haven't talked about yet. They're fourth right now in the Western Conference. The Oklahoma City Thunder. Lucas, what's their ceiling in terms of how far they can get in the playoffs? Because they still do look like a team that can play with a lot of energy and can win games, obviously.
Oh, definitely. I'm a big believer that they can go as far as their leader, Kevin Durant, can go. And, Durant is just an amazing player, obviously a superstar. But one of the things that really has impressed me about this team is that the role players are also stepping up. Serge Ibaka, I love that guy's game. I think that if he were, I can't remember whether it was Fran Fraschilla or Chad Ford who said this earlier in the year, but somebody mentioned that if Serge Ibaka were to be in next year's draft, he would have been a top five pick. So, you know, just having a guy like that on the team is great. And then they have the Nick Collisons, the Thabo Sefolosha, the defensive shutdown guy. And, you know, I've been impressed with the way guys have taken roles on that team. And, you know, that's the first sign of a championship team. Now I think the key is for them, come playoff time, to really take care of the ball. You know, Durant, while he is a great player, and Westbrook, they're both great players, they really turn the ball over a lot. So I really like to see them get some better control come playoff time.
Yeah, that's going to be a huge thing if they can keep the turnover ratio down. But what I like about the Oklahoma City Thunder is that the fan base is behind them 100%. They have one of the best fan bases in the country, I believe. And also, Kevin Durant plays with the passion that you want from your star. He plays with emotion, and he plays with an assassin's mentality. And, I mean, you can tell he wants a championship. He doesn't care how he gets there. He wants one, though.
Well, Kevin Durant, he's really just a once-in-a-generation player. I mean, to find a guy that not only has the physical tools that he has, being 6'9", really just a guard in a sense. But not only that, is that he has the drive to be, you know, the game's greatest player. And we've seen in the league, when he was a rookie, some of the things that he really struggled with were guarding big men, because he's 6'9" and one of the bigger guys on the team. We saw that, you know, his shooting percentages weren't great. And he's definitely improved in that aspect, because he's knocking down three-pointers and free throws with better consistency. And, you know, he just continues to improve every year. And, you know, he's also added, you know, that he's become a better shot blocker. He's passing the ball a little better. You know, he's rebounding the ball better. He's just overall just efficient. And, you know, I think that, you know, I like the quote that says, the team takes the personality of its leader. If that's the case in Oklahoma City, you know, I really would not be surprised if they won a championship this year or any of the following years.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, I mean, just a hypothetical here, but say Portland chose Kevin Durant. How good would Portland be right now?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know how good Kevin Durant... I think Kevin Durant's the type of player that would fit in almost anywhere. But the team around him, you know, I couldn't picture what it would look like because of all the moves. But I would assume that, you know, if they had him and Brandon Roy on the wings, it would be a pretty lethal combination, you know, considering Durant doesn't really necessarily need the ball in his hands. But, you know, one thing that would have worried me about that would have been, you know, both those guys need a lot of shots to be effective. But one of the things that I like about Durant is that he's the type of player that could, you know, assess that and see how he could become more efficient, you know, with less shots. But, yeah, I definitely think that if he had been with the Trailblazers, they would have been great. But I think that if he would have been with any team, he would have been great, regardless. I mean, look how bad the Supersonics were when he came there. Right. They had nothing. They had just lost Ray Allen, just lost Rashard Lewis. There was nothing appealing about that franchise. So if he had joined a place like Portland, who knows where they would be right now. But things in Portland just aren't looking good right now.
Yeah, no, not looking good at all. And just before we get off the Oklahoma City topic, Russell Westbrook has turned into a great player. And he's actually turned into a kind of star 1B.
Yeah, definitely. Westbrook's just a guy whose story, you know, boggles my mind. He's a guy who, coming out of high school, was pretty unknown. Really just blew up his senior year and landed a scholarship to UCLA. And then, you know, he was fortunate enough to have Darren Collison be injured, where he could step into the spotlight and, you know, just, you know, take over for UCLA. And in a sense, you know, he has just as much potential to be a the league's best point guard is a guy like Rajon Rondo or Derrick Rose. He has all the tools. He has the athleticism, defense. You know, every young player needs to work on their ball control. But, you know, he's just another one of those rising point guards that really could become a threat in the West. And, you know, I like what you mentioned about him being, you know, superstar 1B. Because it's almost as much his team as Durant's, because, you know, they're relying on him to take the ball up the court every time. And, you know, it's really just impressive how he's improved drastically since his rookie year.
Yeah, I mean, he's done an amazing job. I love watching him play. And like you mentioned, his story is great to see, too, taking advantages of his opportunities. But we'll just quickly go through the Eastern Conference here. Before we let you go, Lucas, Washington, just to mention for a second, on the road right now, they're 0-18. You can't win too many games when you don't have a win on the road.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's just a team, you know, they're in rebuilding mode. You know, I like where they're going right now, but, you know, road wins are tough for teams that are so young in the NBA. And, you know, as you find, you know, following teams for a few years, and you find that the teams just with the youth just can't win, you know. But they're headed in the right direction. You know, I like John Wall, and I think I really believe in him. And I think that, you know, the management's making some smart decisions by trading away Gilbert Arenas and bringing in a guy like Rashard Lewis, who could have a positive impact on some of the young forwards on that team, like JaVale McGee or Al Thornton or Ejion Leon, or, you know, just a bunch of guys, a bunch of young forwards that he could have a positive impact on. But they're another team that really might suffer from the poor draft next year and could take a little longer to rebuild for them.
Right, exactly. I mean, they still have a long way to go, but they're on the right track. They have a positive trajectory right now. Also, just quickly, New York has surprised some people. Many thought it would take another trade for New York to get going and get in the playoff race at the trading deadline to have help with Stoudemire. But Fields has stepped up. Raymond Felton has turned it on big time, and obviously Amari. I was listening to Bill Simmons, and he was saying that if you asked Amari Stoudemire who the best player in the NBA was, he would say Amari Stoudemire. And I mean, whether or not that's true, that's a good attitude to take, especially for a star of a team looking to lead a franchise that has been dormant during the years of Isaiah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the Knicks are really surprising us with how well they've done. You know, Amari has been so dominant this season, it's really kind of boggled my mind. I always thought of him as a guy who just benefited from Steve Nash, but, you know, he's proving to be a franchise player. And like you mentioned, guys really stepping up into the spotlight. Landry Fields is just a guy who doesn't even play like a rookie. He just plays like a veteran. Guys like Wilson Chandler really playing well. Raymond Felton, you know, playing like a borderline all-star for the Knicks right now. If there weren't so many good point guards in the NBA. I just think that, you know, they have some good things going for them. And, you know, I'd like to see them kind of not really rush things and really have to go for guys like Tony Parker or Carmelo, who don't really make sense in terms of fit. But, you know, I'd like to see them grab a solid center, somebody who could block shots in the middle for them, which is definitely an issue with, you know, Amari playing center position. But, you know, kind of slowly add solid pieces, not really go for the blockbuster deals. I almost don't think it's necessary. Although, recent rumors popped up that Amari texted Carmelo saying that he wants him to come to the Knicks. So who knows what could be in the future for the Knicks.
Yeah, absolutely. Landry Fields just plays with an IQ that I would never expect, especially from a rookie or even a second-year player. He's been playing amazing. He's been a big reason. But yeah, with New York, they have that kind of an attitude where they think they can beat anyone at any time. Despite what they said, the rivalry's not back yet between them and Boston. But they have a chance to bring it back, and they could definitely do that. Let's see, Chicago has Derrick Rose. They're moving along swimmingly, but a cagey-less Boston has lost two in a row, but they're still just one game back of Miami. Is Boston still good enough to contend for the Eastern Conference crown, or do they need help?
Oh, most definitely. They're definitely good enough. And I wouldn't mind seeing them lose a few games here and, you know, allowing their bench to play because, you know, resting up Kevin Garnett and, you know, I wouldn't even mind if, you know, Paul Pierce or Ray Allen took a few days off. I'd just like to see them, you know, bring all they can in the playoffs. And if they can get the bench guys some experience, that would be great. And they're definitely a team to contend with. They've beaten the Miami Heat twice. I could see Miami Heat versus Boston final, Eastern Conference final. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't think that they would have that hard time beating Miami, considering they just have so many veterans there that could really just, you know, get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. The concern right now, for me at least, is just injuries. I just can't see anyone injured on that team that's important. I think that if Rondo goes down once again, I can't imagine they would be as good, because Nate Robinson, you are either his favorite. He's either my favorite player or my least favorite player, depending on how he plays. He plays reckless, which is positive and negative at the same time. So, I mean, just that's something to watch out for, injuries. But, I mean, Miami, they've won 9 in a row. They're looking extremely good. They're looking like the team they're supposed to be. But, obviously, they still have yet to beat Boston, which is very important. But, I mean, right now, they're living up to their promise, and they keep going, and they keep beating the teams they're supposed to beat.
Definitely. I mean, they're living up to their expectations. I think that one of the keys for them is to keep playing like they're playing, playing with an up-tempo style. I like it. I like how, you know, Dwayne Wade and LeBron and James Jones have been really getting the job done in transition. And, you know, people say that doesn't work in the playoffs, but, I just don't see why not. Their defense is solid. I think that they've kind of overachieved a little bit in the stretch, but I think they're really a potent team to watch out for in the playoffs. And I mean, hey, they have pretty much the best trio in the league, so, you know, I'm not really surprised at how well they're doing right now.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm not surprised either, although I'd like to be surprised. If you told me that they lost 5 games in a row, I would be pretty happy, I'll be honest with you. But they're not going to. They don't look like they're going to. They're just too good of a team right now, and they're too good of a team heading into the All-Star break. But Lucas, it's been great having you on. Thank you very much, and talk to you soon to talk some more NBA.
All right, sounds good, Warren. Hey, really appreciate you having me on the show today.
No problem. See you later, man.
All right, see you.